From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in early 2003 when NBC News reporter and soon-to-be lead anchor Brian Williams went to Iraq. Williams was undoubtedly caught up in a dangerous situation with a sandstorm forcing his chopper to land and remain grounded for a couple of days. Before his chopper landed, a different aircraft took fire from Iraqis on the ground. They landed safely, but it was a close call, and Williams ended up interviewing that crew. Well, in the years that followed, Williams' tale changed. He began saying that he was in the chopper that was fired upon. And for some reason, Williams continued to tell that story, adding more detail with each telling, drawing oohs and ahs on David Letterman's show, and then allowing that story to be told even at a hockey game just a couple of weeks ago when the ostensible honor was going to the soldier, not the news anchor. Eventually, the tall tale was too much for the soldiers who truly did take fire. They called Williams out, and now Brian Williams is in trouble. He's taking a self-imposed leave now while NBC News checks out other claims he made. In some ways, he's kind of a laughingstock with different memes online, but the question is, can he return to work? Can he bounce back? What does it do to the brand of journalism in this country? In Rochester, we're fortunate to have a group of experienced news anchors, and from my own experience, I can tell you that they are not the type to seek glory. They don't want to put their faces on every dramatic moment just for the sake of it. I'm proud to have worked with three of the four. I know all four. They're great folks, and I want to know what they think about Brian Williams. My guest for the hour from 13 WHAM TV, Don Alhart's here. Hello, Don.
How are you doing? Good to be here.
Great to be here. Great to have you here. Ginny Ryan is here. Hi, Ginny.
Hello. Thanks
nice
for
to see you
me.
Back here. Doug Emblidge. Hi, Doug.
Hello, Evan Dawson.
And Maureen McGuire from WROC-TV. Maureen, nice
Hi.
To have you.
Hi, Evan.
I'm going to start with you, Don. Of an experienced group here, you've got the most experience, and to me, this is a sad one. Can he keep his job, and should he?
I think it's likely that he probably will in this day and age. And I say that having gone both ways over the weekend thinking about it, and I think, how can somebody survive this? He obviously has admitted that he's lied. That undermines his credibility as a news anchor. And yet, in this day and age, I am not so sure the public in the end won't be forgiving for what I think journalism has become on that level. And that is almost a production, a show. People are getting their news and they're looking at the people as almost more entertainers than they are journalists. We don't have on the network level right now the experienced journalism that we saw with the Walter Cronkites and the Huntleys and the Brinkleys. We have now the kind of a performer who is put in situations where they appear knowledgeable and they'll showcase them in different ways. It's interesting that, obviously a self-imposed moratorium on his appearance, I think, worked out with NBC, but I think they're going to test it. I think what will happen is take him off the air, give it a week or two, and kind of see where the public is weighing in on this. It's possible that he might not survive it, but I think we have seen in the past people in major positions in the news that are caught in a lie where people say they'll never survive this. And all of a sudden, the public either forgives them or doesn't care all that much.
Should he survive it? If it were up to you?
Yeah. I don't think so. To me, it's one thing, I think, to make up and fabricate a story, to repeat it over and over, and then now to be linked to other situations where he has done that, I think almost speaks to a problem that this individual has more than it does to the business itself. I think there is something that there's no reason for it. Mm-hmm. He's already achieved his success. He's already achieved his notoriety. So there's no reason for it. So that leads me to believe or suspect that maybe there's something in his, psyche that this is more pathological on this.
Ginny Ryan?
I'm not sure if he can survive this. I thought at first he could. And then as the story has evolved, I've become to doubt that more and more. I mean, it is bigger than him. It's NBC News. I mean, it's one of the greatest traditions in our country, really, when you think about it. And I begin to wonder this weekend about the people in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. Even if the American public can get past it, he's a leader. He is the leader in the newsroom. And what happens to the people that must work for you and work around you? They might leave. They might have other feelings about you. They might not want to work with you. And that can undermine you and destroy you even further. So there's so much at play here that I'm not sure. At first, I don't know. Did you guys think, Maureen, Doug, that he could survive
it? They've accepted it. They've accepted it because the people in the newsroom, MSNBC and NBC, have known this for years.
That's the bizarre thing. He is not the only one who was on that.
But I guess that speaks to a culture, and that's what bothers me more than anything. I think he could survive it. I wish he'd just step down himself. Somebody needs to show some depth of character here, and I'm not sure having the decision rest in the hands of the corporate minions at NBC is really the answer. But there is a culture that allows for journalism to morph into celebrity. And it begins with just journalism that's based on what the public wants.
And Doug, what do you? I'm sorry, Maureen, I didn't.
It's been that way forever. It seems, at least since my earliest days in the business, and it's not the same as doing what's right.
I guess we don't have all the answers still about what happened, but the preponderance of the evidence seems to be that. As we're hearing it, is what happened. I agree with Don that this seems to be more of a reflection of a particular character flaw in Brian Williams than it is a problem in the industry. Goodness knows we've got plenty of them. But I don't think he can survive it. Unlike politicians who've been part of scandal and celebrities who've been part of scandal, I think this is fairly black and white in what we do, and that Brian Williams was paid more than $10 million a year based mainly on his experience and his credibility. And how, when your reputation is besmirched, do you ever get that back? I'm not sure you can. I agree that news has become, at least at that level, about celebrity to a degree. But I go back to what Ginny said, in that he is the leader of a very large news organization. He's the guy. And I can't imagine the resentment that people who've been there for many, many years longer than he has been there, are feeling that the face of their news organization has brought this scandal on them.
He is the face, and I'll tell you what is not a good enough reason for them to keep him is, well, they don't have a backup plan. I keep hearing the last one, well, they don't have
that.
A backup plan. Well, too bad.
Well, now we hear Katie Couric may come back.
I don't believe it.
What about Lester Holt? But I don't really care. I like Lester Holt, but I don't care if you have a backup plan or not. If he is untenable, if this is not going to work, it's not going to work. And Jake writes to us and says, I've only known about the Iraq claims. Are there others? I want to play a couple of sound bites, if we could, because the New York Times has done a lot of digging into this. And unfortunately, this is starting to look like a serial fabulist. Mm-hmm. Let me go back, and what you're going to hear are two separate sound clips, both on the subject of Katrina. Now, maybe you heard about Brian Williams talking about seeing a body floating by his hotel room, which is sort of in question, or the notion that they needed police officers to train their guns on gangs so they could do their live shots. That's in question. Here's what's unassailable. He told a story that changed just like Iraq, and we're going to listen to the first one. The first clip is Brian Williams, 2005, shortly after arriving in New Orleans, talking about getting to the New Orleans Superdome. Let's listen.
The living conditions in the Superdome went from grim to untenable, unlivable. Very quickly, we'd heard the story of a man killing himself falling from the upper deck.
We'd heard the story of a man killing himself falling from the upper deck. In 2014, Brian Williams sat down with Tom Brokaw to talk about reporting on Katrina. Now listen to how he describes that scene at the Superdome.
My goal was to get to the Superdome, because that was being called the shelter of last resort in the city of New Orleans. We were among the first allowed in. We watched, all of us watched as one man committed suicide.
All of us watched as one man committed suicide? He didn't report that at the time. His report was they got there and they had heard about it. I mean, that troubles me.
It does, and now there's questions about his reporting in Israel as well, taking shots by Hezbollah in a helicopter going over Israel. And I think what we have here, and this is what kind of raised my concern this weekend, you not only have people going back as far as when he was a teenager selling Christmas trees and supposedly robbed at gunpoint. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's unfair, but you have people going back and questioning everything he said. So what happens going forward? Will the American people question everything he says in present tense?
How can you not?
Exactly. And that's where I think he might not be able to do this job again. And then there's the issue, should he be able to do this job again? It's really a privilege. I mean, I feel like our job is a privilege.
He has become, and social media has something to do with this, as it gets creative in poking fun at this scandal, he's become a laughingstock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a very hard thing. The American people are forgiving about a lot of things. We saw Elliot Spitzer rise from the ashes of his scandal to have his own talk show for a while. Didn't last, but he made it. But he wasn't a news anchor. He was a governor, and I'm not putting us on a on a plane higher than that.
No, no.
But it's what you have is your credibility. And when it's gone, I don't know that you can get it back, especially as we're starting to uncover. If it was a single incident,
I know it.
Yeah. You know, a misspeak.
And you can't keep up. You can't keep up on social media with the number of pictures that are being photoshopped and putting him in almost every situation you can.
And so maybe that makes this even harder for him to survive, because 10 years ago, when there wasn't Twitter to lampoon this, it's bad enough, and he probably is, the crime is still the crime, so to speak, but now, as Doug said, when you're a laughingstock, that's hard to fight back from. On the issue of his integrity, which if you look at the NBC News ads, they had taglines that say, you know, integrity is not something that happens overnight. It's earned. I mean, that's what they built his $10 million a year on. And even if he had, let's say he had been uncovered to have lied about an affair or something, and he had lied about all of these things, that is lying of a different nature, but this is lying to your viewers about the very thing you're
about
supposed to be
news.
Doing. About the news.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. No, that's that. What else is
but
there?
I guess
for him?
You know, and I, what bothers me, is the inserting yourself in the story, injecting yourself in the story. Mm-hmm. It always has. Mm-hmm. It's you know, there have been, I'm sure all of you have had moments over the years when you've been subtly pressured to participate in stories in ways that maybe you wouldn't like to do. So there is that pressure, and I understand it, but this just goes beyond the pale. And we're being shown that by the reports refuting what he's, you know, his own accounts of what's gone on. But you know, being an anchor and being a reporter out in the field are really two different beasts in a lot of ways. And when I've never believed that any of the network anchors who've flown into, you know, to these hot spots, Katrina or Iraq, were really there other than to highlight what was going on with their reporters. And it's always bothered me when it's become something else. And if it's going to be something else, you have to be an eyewitness. That's your job. And that is that's a position that we need to trust.
And that's
where
the business,
shot.
That's where we've changed. I mean, Peter Jennings was a correspondent long before he was a news anchor. He was reporting from the scenes of you know, conflicts around the world, and rose from that to become an anchor. You know, same thing as I mentioned with Walter Cronkite and others. We don't have that now. Now we find the networks trying to put their anchors in situations so that they appear to have that background of reporting when they're only there for moments and photo ops and then brought back.
Seems to
the
be
desk.
A faster track now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think Brian Williams did do some amount of foreign reporting, but we were talking when we first heard all this that he'd done enough of it and seen enough.
He didn't need
Why did he need to exaggerate?
So silly.
Why did he need to take it beyond what had actually happened to him? He did spend that night hunkered down in the desert
in a sandstorm.
You know, and that's if
absolutely
that's enough of a good
a good story. But and I also agree with what you said that the thing we all learned in journalism 101 was you are not the story. Now that's not to say you don't occasionally relate your experience. We've all done that. We've all had stories that lend themselves a little bit to first person reporting. But what Brian Williams did was he took what was already a good story, and for some reason it comes back to that personal foible that he may have. Now we would, as Evan said, probably forgive personal foibles that were more of a character flaw unrelated to his job, fallout in his family life or whatever. I mean, we've seen that happen. But I think this, because it so directly affects and is tied to his credibility, is what makes this something that will be almost impossible to recover from.
Let me take this to a hypothetical, just for the heck of it. NBC comes out with a statement in the future that he does have some problems, some mental issues. And there are some memory problems that he has. And he has been taking medication for this. Hmm. And when he doesn't take this medication, sometimes he can slip into forgetfulness or stories become confused in his mind.
Misremembering.
And so
he has misremembering syndrome.
We're going to take him off the air for a while he gets further treatment on this. But we're confident with the proper medical attention, it can come back. This is purely obviously hypothetical.
Well, you know,
but I'm trying to look ahead to see what the public is willing to accept.
You know, he can come back if they tether him to the desk, tell him to read what's written for him, and forbid him from all public appearances.
And it doesn't honestly.
He thrives on public appearances.
There is an issue of narcissism here that seems to be evident in the fact that he needs to put himself in the center of everything. And from what colleagues are saying, that has been an ongoing issue for them too in the newsroom.
But it's an issue everywhere. I think I've read some accounts of what's happening at ABC with their selection of a new anchor, and the pretty boy, they have betting pools on how often he'll appear in a television story.
Oh, they're promoting him that way, too. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
The issue of celebrity is, that's my point. It's promoted, it's encouraged, and I think it probably made it very, very easy for Brian Williams to tell tall tales.
Back to
people
Don's
listened.
Point real
people
quickly.
Were listening.
If indeed NBC comes out with that syndrome story.
He's on medication.
It better be true.
Absolutely.
I can't make that up.
There's no manufacturing of that. Yeah.
There's a bigger issue here, in that NBC News had a responsibility. 10 years ago, the helicopter pilot reported to NBC, sent an email saying Brian Williams' version of what happened in the helicopter in the desert in Iraq is not true. He sent an email, and he never heard one response. Other employees, producers, assistants had said the same thing. This is not true. And if it's true, Brian Stelter reported that at least they rationalized it by saying, well, he didn't fabricate this on our airwaves. He fabricated it elsewhere.
Other venues.
And they said that no one could talk to him. He was bigger than everything else.
It can't get to
and
that point,
and that's not
right.
Yeah. Exactly. So NBC has a responsibility, and they apparently turned a blind eye to this storytelling. And I think they, too, should be held to task for this.
And will
they?
I mean, as this unfolds, will they?
But they should have done it earlier. Yeah. Now they're backpedaling, and they're trying to fix something that may be too far broken.
I think they're in the sorry we got caught phase.
Exactly.
I think he is, and they are, too, because they did not fire the preemptive strike against this.
It sounds like the panel agrees with Ken Auletta writing in The New Yorker this morning, quote, while the spotlight is on Williams' transgressions, a word about the complicity of NBC and the other networks' marketing machines. The networks have a stake in promoting their anchors as godlike figures. By showing them in war zones with Obama or Putin, buffeted by hurricanes, and comforting victims, they are telling viewers that their anchors are truth-tellers who have been everywhere and seen everything and have experience you can trust. On his helicopter in Iraq, Williams was accompanied by an NBC crew. Did they not speak up to correct the record for fear of undermining the all-powerful anchor? NBC had a stake in promoting Brian Williams as all-knowing, just as a promo ad for ABC anchor David Muir, I saw today, portrayed the lightly experienced 40-year-old as worldly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a harsh commentary, and the reason I wanted Don and Doug and Ginny and Maureen in here is not only to react to this, but to talk about the fact that, look, I invited you because I've worked with three of you, and I respect all four of you, and what you do still matters greatly to this community. But doesn't this hurt all of you? It doesn't just hurt Brian Williams and NBC News, right? Doesn't this hurt the brand?
Yeah. We hope not.
Of television news.
Realistically, sure.
That's a long battle, though. That's been going on forever. I don't know if you can hurt something that has been damaged for so long. You know, I think of Brian Williams, for example, and the whole debate about trust, and it's true, you know, but if he were on the air tomorrow, I'd still believe him if he told me that it snowed in Boston and the president flew to California for a speech. And, you know, I'd still believe him. His ability to keep himself out of the story, speak truth to power, nah, that's shot. And that's been shot for pretty much everybody. And it's just so much worse
is
now.
Is it shot for everybody? I don't think it's quite shot for everybody, not for me as a viewer.
What's always bothered me about discussions about the media is that the impression is given by those who would oppose what they would call the mainstream media. The impression is given that we all call each other every morning and decide what our agenda is going to be. And I can tell you nothing is further from the truth. There are certain truths in the criticism of the media that I agree with wholeheartedly, and I'm part of it. But I also will tell you that we as a newsroom and over at Channel 8 and Channel 10, we don't, you know, there's not this lockstep that we all walk in every day. But the perception is that, and we all get lumped together. And that's the danger here with the Brian Williams thing, is that we all get lumped together. We do things differently. There are characteristics about one newscast and one newscaster over another that a viewer may prefer. But yes, is there damage done by this? I absolutely think so. I agree that Brian Williams could still tell me things that were indisputable in terms of facts of the day. But can he ever do the kind of reporting he apparently likes to do again?
We do, though, follow each other's Twitter accounts.
Yes, we do.
So there, you know, there's a little conspiracy there that's unwritten. Anyway, we don't acknowledge it. But
that is true. We're going to get to the phones in a second. I haven't even needed to mention the phone number, which is no surprise. But if you did want to call and want to try to get through, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And look, somebody called in and say, you know, Evan, it would have been beneficial to have someone affiliated with NBC. I will just say this. I have a bias. I worked at 13WHAM for 11 years, and Doug, Don, and Ginny are friends and mentors and do wonderful jobs. And I did not seek to include News 10 NBC. You know, Janet's great. I don't know Scott that well. I don't know that I've ever met him, but I certainly can't, you know, say anything bad about anyone's work in this town. This has just happened to be, I figured, I don't know if these folks are going to want to come in and talk about this. And everyone said yes right away. So it was sort of an embarrassment of riches. Yeah. That's why we have the panel that we have today. But I take the point. So let me get to the phones, and you can weigh in as well. This is Paul in Rochester. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Truth of journalism may partially depend upon the audience that you're trying to reach. You cannot go into any store at the checkout line and look up and see the National Enquirer or the World newspaper. Both these are packed full of lies. Everything about the president and arguing with his wife, right on through. These new two newspapers are extremely successful, have a great sales record, and yet nobody said anything about these papers, and they're right there for everybody to read. So, as whether or not Brian Williams can come back, John Q. Public, there may be a few Puritans in the audience who will be greatly offended, but I say, on the average basis, they could care less. They'll probably say, okay, who's the next person to get the news?
I actually agree with that.
You know? And so you have to look at it from different perspectives, not only from, and also on different intellect perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Paul,
so,
thank
you. I hope he gets to come back, and he does well.
Thanks, Paul.
You know, I have to tell you, I will confess this. Up until about 10 years ago, I loved reading the tabloids. But it was pure entertainment for me. He's like, where are they getting this? Who's making this up? Oh my gosh, this is more interesting. So, you know, I've always had a soft spot. I believe they have a tawdry little place in the marketplace, and that's, I'm all for it. But having said that, what is astonishing to me now, and I think this is why I agree with the caller, there is an entertainment factor in the news now that is so over the top. There are morning shows in every market in this country, national news included, where you have to wait an hour before you get to the real news. And I know that from the sales end of things, these are the things that are bringing in the viewers, and people like the YouTube videos and the virals and the yuckity yuck 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 and the entertainment and let's interview a celebrity, but it's discouraging, And I believe it places, it does impact decisions that are made on the other end, you know, when it, in the evening news. It does contribute to a celebrity factor among people who should be serious journalists. It's easier to corral an audience with a tall tale and feel like you can get away with it because people haven't demanded more. And it is discouraging. There's a lot of pressure on journalists, but they're, you know, at the same time, you're scratching your head because the story about the cats and the dogs loving each other gets far more airplay and response than the very serious story.
It's the dessert that we used to talk about.
It is.
But dessert should not outweigh the broccoli. But I don't mind a little dessert as long as there's broccoli, too.
And, you know, it has its place. But it's... I think that
you're saying the balance is tilted,
and especially the evening newscasts. It's very. I have seen it. They've gone soft.
If Brian Williams does not survive this, does network news as we know it survive? In other words, David Muir is young, not that established. Brian Williams
Scott
disappeared.
Pelley is,
Scott Pelley. I don't think people
things.
Are from. You know that. Almost, we seem to be, or this brings us to the brink of the era where that dominant network anchor is no longer the focal point.
And now,
people, just as they get their news off the phone or get it from social media, those newscasts become more of the entertainment
and
tonight.
I think it's been an evolution, too. I mean, if you think about the way the visual cues, the production values of a newscast have changed, Entertainment Tonight used to look very different than... Just pick one, NBC Nightly News. But now, with the advent of graphics and changes in music and a leaning perhaps toward stories that you would consider not real news as because they get more viewers, the newscasts are very hard for a young person. In the old days, the beginning of the CBS Evening News was very serious. Huh. And the beginning of Entertainment Tonight was a totally different thing. Now it's hard when you look at them just on the face sometimes to tell the difference. Obviously, the content is still different, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But I think there is, and what Don is saying is that are we to the point where there's not a Walter Cronkite, a Peter Jennings, and a Humphrey
Bogart. If we're evolving to that, does this kind of push it
over the edge?
Is this the? We're going to get to the phones in a second again. So Ben, Brian, others, we're coming to you. But on the point, for example, of David Muir, right now, I think David Muir is regretting that just a few weeks ago he was on a show, Midterm Mayhem, with hosts Cal Penn and Nando Villa, and he was. He didn't bring it up himself. They asked him, but he indulged in their desire, show me listening face. Now show me really listening face. And he indulged in it, and he was playing along as this is how you trick people into think that you're really listening. Now you don't want to – that's the wrong direction you want to go in. Mm-hmm. Now you're looking like an unserious entertainer as opposed to someone who's a real journalist leading a real news organization.
But where are these – what is going on at ABC that they would even allow him onto that show?
I don't think networks control everything that anchors do on the side. Look
but
at Brian Williams.
Contracts. They have...
Well, look at Brian Williams, who's on Saturday Night Live, and David Letterman multiple times. In fact, the Washington Post, I believe, reported that he forwent a medal ceremony to be on Saturday Night Live. So I don't think
and lied about it.
I don't think networks clear their schedules.
And one of the speculations now is Brian Williams was due on David Letterman again this coming Thursday. And a lot of people thought that he would keep it, and that would be his big public mea culpa. Yeah. Now I'm not sure that's going to be the case. Let me grab Ben in Rochester, who is Ben. You're 24 years old.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I think that there's a lot of people in my generation that mistrust, we don't trust television news media, and I think we all have pretty good reasons for it. One way or another, we find ourselves near a story, and we see both sides, and then when we watch the news media, even local news, we don't see both sides. For me personally, I went to document by myself a protest that happened not that long ago in Rochester. It was an anti-capitalist march, which I think was poorly organized. I actually got arrested for filming it from the sidewalk. I was tackled by a cop and arrested, and the video was deleted from my phone. But there was no fire truck blocking the protest like was reported in news media. And there was no quoting saying that this is what the police said. It just said the protesters blocked the fire truck, and it's without saying that that's the story of the police.
Ben, may I ask?
And so there's mistrust in general, and I can understand that. I think that news media, television news media, is dying, and maybe it's a good thing at this point.
Ben, may I ask you, what is your source of news?
I have a number of different sources.
Can you tell me one?
A lot. I watch a lot of Democracy Now. I read a lot of Glenn Greenwald. A lot of people that I have found trust with because of the way that they've reported their stories and how they've given both sides. But locally, I've seen a lot of just taking what the police say and reporting exactly that instead of actually asking the people that are trying to express themselves what they're doing and why they're expressing it. People that go out and protest on the street are doing it because they feel like they have no other means of expressing their frustration with their situation. And they're doing it specifically so they can get on the news and tell people what's wrong. And there's just, I see very little interviews with those frustrated people. And I just see a lot of reporting what needs to be said in order to quell a protest and not speak truth.
Ben, let me just jump in.
Yeah, I want more broccoli.
I'm with you. Wanting
good
more
for
broccoli.
You, Ben.
Ben, thanks for the call. Let me just, I don't want to make it a referendum on covering police, but I think to that point, you know, he's 24 and he's feeling a mistrust. And that should be a concern, right?
Yeah,
I mean, look, I've worked in commercial television news. That's a demographic you want, and you don't want people feeling mistrust.
Absolutely.
And so the question is, how do you start to fix that? And I think part of fixing that is also meeting a younger audience's needs and demands. I've often said one of the more forward-thinking people I know in news is the guy who hired me, Chuck Samuels, who Chuck was always saying internet-based and how to meet audiences' needs and demands and daily appointment viewership is changing. So I don't know where we're going. I don't know where AM radio is going, but there is change coming. And so adapting good coverage that makes Ben and his generation want to come back to you and then finding a way to reach them, that's a hard puzzle to solve, I think.
The puzzle was always hard, even before people had this many choices. We will very often, as we discuss our menu of news for the day, which very often, by the way, changes 15 times from the morning meeting to the afternoon meeting, and I'm sure it's the same for Maureen. But you're always trying to say, well, who's our audience? Who's watching us? What are they interested in? Well, the fact of the matter is that it is still broadcasting. We are not narrowcasting. Mm-hmm. It is Ben, and it is people who feel politically the exact opposite of Ben, and it's everybody in between. And so we do have this huge responsibility to try to reach out to both ends of the extreme and don't forget the people in the middle, which is probably the majority. But it's always been a tough question. It's just tougher now. Who's our audience? What's our responsibility to that audience? And the fact of the matter is our audience is everybody out there potentially who gets our signal.
If Don is right, and this Brian Williams story is the tipping point that leads to essentially the end of the era of an anchor viewed that way, what is next for the network newscast, Don?
I think the network newscast become not that dissimilar. I just think the focus will be maybe on
storytelling.
The storytelling, the anchors. I look up at sometimes I'm at my office after the 6 o'clock news and the ABC News comes on, and then it goes into Entertainment Tonight, I believe, at 7. I'm not sure. I sometimes look up. I'm not sure what, what show. I'm out of the corner of my ear what I'm hearing. I think we'll see the network news, and I don't think watered down to that extent, but I think we'll see that kind of presentation where people won't in the future pay that much attention specifically to the people who are bringing them the stories from the anchor desk. I think we have all been benefited from an era where that was the reason for all of our success now. People do identify with us. I'm not so sure 10, 20 years from now you're going to have people with that kind of identification. Reporters are going to come and go, and everybody's going to kind of blend in, I think.
We're already there with social media. I mean, in some ways, isn't the rise in cable programming built around personalities? I mean, Megyn Kelly, Bill O'Reilly, other
people.
But
that's dying, too.
But they're fast becoming popular among viewers in that time slot. And I'm wondering just if the future is in more personality-driven, more singular, one person leading a show. I don't know. I'm wondering if that is the future.
And in those situations, you've got, in many cases, although Megyn Kelly probably disagree, I think you have a point of view or that people can identify with. So it kind of separates you from that part that we've always said, we're right down the middle and have to remain neutral and don't register with a political party and don't express our views. So I think the people that choose that path and express their views will probably rise. I'm not so sure, you know, overall. I mean, there will be obviously people who, we hope anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's the success we have enjoyed.
I mean, we've been evolving for so long. I mean, it's slow at times and very quick at other times. So I'm not sure where we're heading.
Well, maybe one of the lessons here is there is an NBC person who reports in some of the most dangerous situations in the world, speaks fluent Arabic, was kidnapped in Syria. Has anybody asked Richard Engel what he thinks? Because he is doing all the things that Brian Williams was kind of pretending to do. Or Bob Woodruff. Or David Bloom died. I mean, you know, these are the people that I fear Brian Williams is. Imagine working that organization and then looking at that guy trying to take the credit.
Exactly.
When you're actually doing it, maybe to Don's point, maybe the future is more of the emphasis on the Engels of the world, the people in the field doing the gritty reporting, and less of...
If they can sell that.
But even there... There are critics who will come out and say the embedded journalist is really nothing more than a branch of the military's outreach, trying to get their point across. And if you go back to World War II, it was actually worse then because they were truly mouthpieces of the government. They were severely restricted in what they could say. I mean, we didn't know FDR had polio for the, you know, I mean, it was all an orchestrated idea that these things were going to come out this way or that way. So, I mean, it does evolve. It's evolved in one direction and maybe evolving back now another direction. But I admire Richard Engel's work. But even there, I read a piece the other day that was fairly critical of the way the networks have reported on war, not just Brian Williams' story, but the fact that some people don't believe they're getting the whole story on whether it was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq or anything that's happened since.
All right, every phone line's filled up, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a 60-second break, come back, and it's going to be your phone calls the rest of the hour as we talk about Brian Williams, the future of journalism in this country, and what we have learned in the last week. Don, you've got to run here, or can you?
Nope, I will stay.
Don's going to stay. Well, that's great, because our phone lines are all filled up. Don Elhart, Doug Emblich, Jenny Ryan from 13 WHAM TV, Maureen McGuire from WROC TV. Short break, your phone calls after this break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, in our first hour, are we now in a post-blog era? Perhaps the most read blog of all time is Andrew Sullivan, and last Friday, Sullivan stopped after 15 years and 300 posts a week. Some analysts say we're done with blogs, but to the contrary, we talked to a panel of bloggers and analysts who say we're not there yet. Join the conversation on Tuesday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Our friends in commercial television news were, you got to get used to the fast breaks in public radio. I remember being with Bob Smith in the studio for the first time a number of years back, and I remember thinking, where is the break? No, it's just something to get used to. Let me get to the phones, and let's see here. We've got Brian in Spencerport. Go ahead, Brian.
I think the beginning of it began when the news divisions became profit centers, and Rupert Murdoch, along his emissary, Newt Gingrich, got the employees of their employees on the Supreme Court to rule that Fox News can say whatever they want and it doesn't have to be the truth. And Brian Williams, to tie this in, felt, hey, these guys are saying anything they want, they're getting away with it, I will as well. And I want to agree with everything that Brian, 40 years my junior, said, and I get all of my information because the ratings on network TV, just they're plummeting because no one believes them anymore. I get them from the blogs, which is your next program.
Brian, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Anybody want to weigh in there? Maureen, go ahead.
I wanted to go back to the young viewer, Ben.
Yeah.
And just say, I love committed, interested, young, 24-year-olds like Ben, because they are the future. And, you know, he's watching local news with a critical eye, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
It should be watched with a critical eye. There are a lot of young journalists and a lot of old geezers like me who just need to be kept on our toes. Journalism isn't, you know, the best thing we can do is correct our mistakes when we make them,
mm-hmm.
And move on. And educated viewers are wonderful. And there are far too few of them. And so he gives me hope.
I agree because I think we do live off feedback. And the mm-hmm. feedback is so instantaneous now, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or an email. We used to get letters from people in mm-hmm. envelopes and open them up.
Remember
sometimes
those?
Still do.
Yeah.
Phone calls. Remember phone
we
calls?
We do here at WXXI.
Does anybody call anymore? No one calls.
And people need to know that we do pay attention to that.
We do,
and
absolutely.
we do take it seriously. And I think any editorial meeting or reaction in the newsroom, we do listen to people. We don't just say, well, what we had on is right, and we're not going to pay attention to it. I think there is a real effort to get the story right and to get both sides. We may not always on the scene get to everyone that we should
mm-hmm.
or in the time allowed, but I think that doesn't really portray the spirit of what we're trying to do.
Time till the next newscast and time that you have on the newscast are the two greatest limiting factors in us being that keep us from being the perfect people we would like to be.
Can I just say one more thing pertaining to the younger demographic? A couple years ago, I was going through some old files at work, and I found scripts delivered and written by Tom Decker, who was the king of local news in the earliest days of television news in Rochester. And these scripts went on, and I got to the year 1968, and I was astonished at Tom's own writing describing an anti-war protest down at Washington Square Park. And he described the protesters as young ruffians and shaggy hairs. I mean, he used these terms to describe these people. And I thought, you know, and I felt so, you know, discouraged on one hand because my idol was clearly demonstrating bias. And, and on the other hand, I felt a great sense of relief that journalism is far more fluid. There is no such thing as the good old days. All we can do is stay honest, stay on course, let this industry evolve the way it's meant to be, and be open to feedback and not lie.
Well, and
well said.
A couple of comments here. Kyle Clark, listening from Denver. Kyle used to work at 13 WHAM TV.
Hi, Kyle.
He's an anchor in Denver, and a guy from Lyons here. He says, Brian Williams' situation and your callers highlight that news consumers demand to be treated as intelligent co-gatherers, not receptacles.
Absolutely.
Interesting point there. Mm-hmm. I would also say, to Doug's point, that the limiting factors are time to the next newscast and time in the newscast. I was always the reporter who was being told I had to cut down my stories. Every producer I've ever worked with told me I had to cut. But you've got more newscast time than ever now.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
And so I will get back on my high horse and say, I want to see you have longer stories, and don't be afraid to give me more depth. I'll say that, and then every producer I've ever worked with will roll
And
there.
Maureen, just think, when Tom Decker was reading those stories, I was probably running the camera in the studio, which I did in the summers.
That's right.
You were one of the shaggy hairs.
He probably was looking at me when he wrote
this. This is Chad in Cayuga. Chad, go ahead.
How you doing? I think that the problem is, of course, as you guys described, the lack of source of facts anymore. Hmm. And some extent, it's our fault as readers because we're less and less willing to pay for it. We're less and less willing to subscribe to legitimate paper outlets like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, and we're certainly those organizations, even the big organizations, are cutting back on their investments in determining the news and finding news stories and invalidating things. So I think. To some extent, it's a matter of money. If we as consumers were willing to pay for a high-quality organization to gather the facts and report the facts, like the facts used to be reported in the Democrat and Chronicle and the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. I mean, let's face it; those big organizations have had their crises of confidence too. But I think it's a matter of money.
Thanks for the call, Chan. Any agreement, disagreement, Jenny?
The truth is free. I mean, I think what we're talking about, the very basic of this conversation, is someone who didn't tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can certainly turn on NBC Nightly News and not have to have cable or anything else, mm-hmm. and get that. I don't think there's a premium on that. And certainly there's more news at our fingertips than ever before. Sure, there's been cutbacks, but I think it's easier to get the news than it ever has been before. So I don't think we can use that necessarily as an excuse.
And the individual now has to be more of an editor.
Exactly.
You really do.
I mean, exactly.
You can't always rely on the organizations to be the editor. If you're getting it from Twitter and Facebook and all of the sites that are out there, you have to kind of be your own editor in many respects and not take it all as truth.
On Twitter, Matt says, it seems like the elephant in the studio is how Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have eroded public opinion of news and news anchors. Mm. That's a fair comment. They have certainly picked apart the weaknesses as they see them. Mm-hmm. But it's also true that John Oliver, who came from the Daily Show and is now hosting his weekly show on HBO, he is hiring researchers to do actual journalism, even though he's doing it with a bit of a veneer of humor. So it'd be interesting to see what their impact going forward.
That's a consumer issue, too. I think the average person knows the difference between mm-hmm. the Daily Show and let's say, the NBC or the CBS or ABC Evening News or whatever else, or the Evening News Hour. But I think that that there's so much choice out there now that's incumbent on us in so many ways. As we look at Twitter and we look at Facebook and we look at the Internet, there's so many sources for news. We have to be, as Don said, the vetters of our own information that we consume. Have they poked fun at us? Join the club. It's a big one.
It's been going on a long time, hasn't it?
Some would argue, though, that occasionally they are doing real journalism. I never liked it when Jon Stewart says, don't paint me with that brush. I'm still a comedian. John Oliver is not backing away from the fact mm-hmm. that he wants to do real journalism. And I think you can do it in different ways. So so that will
Good
be interesting
point.
To see going forward. Let me get Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, this is Keith Baker. I'm sorry, I guess it's not supposed to use my last name, but
it's okay,
I'm
Keith.
68 years old. I have great respect for Don, and in fact, my wife and I sing in the choir at the church where Doug used to go or does go. Mm-hmm. But I'm concerned about the program. I guess I've gotten cynical in my old age because it seems a little self-serving that there's nobody there from Channel 10.
No, I addressed that. That's a fair point. It's the host's fault. This is one of those situations where it has been a bit of a delicate situation talking about Brian Williams. I reached out to the people I used to work with in so much respect, Don, Doug, and Ginny. I know Maureen. I wanted to have her voice in. I figured if one or two of them say yes, we may have a discussion. I can reach out to Channel 10 as well, even though I don't know the folks over there as well. Everyone said yes immediately, and so I was in a quandary.
It would seem like impugning Brian Williams, and maybe he's got this coming on him, mm-hmm. would steer people away from that 6:30 slot.
I don't think so. I think more people are watching than ever, at least for the short term.
Everyone will be tonight. Yeah.
Keith, I take that point, but nobody in the studio was saying never watch that newscast. I mean, I think everyone wants to see, even if they replace Brian Williams, is it Lester Holt? Yeah. Is it does Brokaw come back and sort of shepherd it in a different direction, as we've heard?
I liked Brian Williams.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, as a viewer of news,
yeah.
I enjoyed
as
Brian
viewer,
Williams,
I
and I was very disappointed by all this.
But by the way, Keith, I'm also going to say that if Brian Williams' ratings go down, he has made that bed, and there are consequences. Now, I don't want to be the judge and jury. He appears to be kind of a serial dissembler. If that's the case, his ratings probably should go down. But I'm going to be watching. Mm. I'm not telling you not to watch.
Some of our best friends work at Channel 10.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And my point about that is Channel 10 locally is not NBC Network News.
Well, that's the other thing.
And
people,
New York and Washington and beyond. So no one's trying to hurt anybody. And Channel 10,
no.
News 10 NBC has got some wonderful
Scott
people
Pelley
there.
Does not take my calls.
That's another thing.
Since that dinner you guys had.
You know, to some degree, there is that expectation that that wall, people think that wall doesn't exist between either a corporate owner or the network parent. But yes, Scott Pelley is, there's not like a hotline for Scott Pelley. He doesn't walk down the hall and pass Maureen in the hall and say, mm-hmm. what are you guys doing today? Here's what we're doing.
You know, I will say, though, Scott Pelley's work in journalism over the decades,
I think he's a fantastic journalist,
has been amazing. Yeah, so it's just interesting that he's now in this anchor chair and tethered. I always wondered why he'd want to do that.
Well,
I can think of a few reasons.
Okay.
A few million?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? A few million reasons?
Okay.
All right, so I've got 90 seconds left. Let's go around the room. Don, again, it seems the consensus is he shouldn't survive. You're the one saying more than anybody he could survive this, but... what's the overriding feeling you get of this? Are you sad for this?
I think the sadness is a good word for that, because it does raise questions about journalism universally, and it shouldn't just because of one person and what one person did, but it does raise some questions. On the plus side of that, then it makes us more aware of that. I think you may see in journalism now maybe a little extra effort to make sure everything we do, not that we haven't, not that we wouldn't continue to do so, but now there's that little extra emphasis on make sure you have it right, make sure it is the truth.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of re-examining going on right now.
Yeah, I think this
probably
is,
naturally.
And I think this is great for us to be speaking to each other and about this and with our viewers, too. There is no cloak. We're not trying to hide anything. And I think if we can all talk about it, and maybe it will stoke a greater interest in journalism, and citizen journalism, and make us more active listeners and readers. And that's what we need, is an active public to make us all better.
They're part of the shock to the system, which this was a big shock to the system. Mm-hmm. But we get them all the time, and I think they are very healthy. As Maureen said, the smartest viewers are the ones that are most valuable to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Respect our listeners, respect your viewers, and I think... excellent panel this hour. Thanks to all the calls. We couldn't even get to all of them. Many, many comments online. Couldn't get to all of those. But some of the leaders in local journalism. Don Elhart, Jenny Ryan, Doug Emblidge, Maureen McGuire. My great pleasure having you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Thanks, everybody. Val, great job engineering, as always. We even see my old friend Nate Miller in the studio. There's still photojournalism, too, by the way, in Rochester. They get no credit, and they deserve a lot more. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.